We hope and trust that you will find this Torah in Motion program meaningful. Through these programs, Torah in Motion encourages discussion, debate, and education about the most important issues facing Jews and Judaism today. Together, we can focus on creating religious commitment through an honest and sophisticated encounter with topics that are relevant to being Jewish in the modern world. For more information about this and other Torah in Motion programs, please visit the website at www.torahinmotion.org.
Tisha B'Av is certainly the darkest, the saddest day of the year. But we find that Tisha B'Av is also called Moed. Kara Alai Moed. God declared this day to be a festival, if you will. And some of our observances on Tisha B'Av reflect this. Although the first half of the day we sit on the floor, we say kinos. Yet on the other hand, we don't say tachnon either. Like a semi-holiday. The Svarim tell us that the reason for this is because Tisha B'Av is not only the roots and the beginning of our troubles, our exile, our persecution, but Tisha B'Av is also the roots of our redemption. Chazal tell us that Mashiach was born, will be born on Tisha B'Av. There's a very curious custom which is quoted in the Birkei Yosef. As we know that in Tisha B'Av, a person is not to be distracted from the thoughts of mourning. If a person can avoid doing work, he certainly should do so. But the custom was cited that in certain places in Italy, the custom was that after Chatzos, after midday, women deliberately turned to their housework to wash and to clean and to straighten out the house. And it's a very peculiar custom. And the Birkei Yosef writes that the rationale behind this custom was to reinforce the belief in redemption. As if to say we are so certain that geula, that redemption is imminent, that we have to straighten out the house and make sure everything is in order in anticipation of Mashiach's coming. What is the source of this idea that Mashiach will be born in Tisha B'Av? It's a medrash, it's also a Yerushalmi, but it's a medrash in Eicha. And the medrash goes like this. There's a dispute as to what the name of Mashiach is going to be. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Tzemach Shemo. His name is going to be Tzemach. Tzemach means a sprout. He cites a verse in Zechariah, Hinei, Yish Tzemach Shemo, Mitachav Yitzmach. And Rav Yudan says that his name is Menachem, because it says in Megillas Eicha, Ki rachat mimeni Menachem, we lament because our Menachem, our comforter, is so far off. So that's a reference to Mashiach, Menachem. So Amar Rav Chanina, said Rav Chanina, no pligi, there's no dispute, really, whether it's Tzemach or whether it's Menachem. Because Chushbina Dedein, Chushbina Dedein. If you calculate the gematria, the numerical value of these two words, Tzemach and Menachem, you'll discover they're identical. So really, there's no dispute. Tzemach, Menachem, it's all the same thing. But that itself is noteworthy. Perhaps we'll come back to this. What the meaning of this idea that Tzemach and Menachem are both the same numerical value. But the Medrash goes on to tell us the story, a proof to the position of Rav Yudan. The Mashiach's name is Menachem. And it tells the following story. Uvada Hava B'chad Bainash, there was a story with a certain individual, the Hava Karade, he was plowing. He was plowing behind a team of oxen. Goas Chada Torse, one of his oxen groaned. I guess in the manner that oxen do. So Ava Aloy Chad Aravi, an Arab happened to pass by and witness this very common occurrence. Amalei, and the Arab asked the man behind the plow, Moat, what are you? What nationality do you belong to? Amalei, you die and I'm a Jew. Amalei, he said, if so, if you're a Jew, and I'll tell you the significance of your cow, your axe groaning, Shri Tairach or Shri Padnach, undo your axe and undo your plow. It's time for you to interrupt your work to begin to mourn. So the Jew says, why? Amalei, the Beis Hamikdash shine the Yudai Charav. Because the Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed. That's the message I picked up from the axe. I'll just mention, the Maharal points out regarding this Gemara, a very interesting thing. Rashi in Chumash tells us that there are things that animals know that human beings don't know. The story of Bilam and the donkey. Remember? The donkey saw the angel. Bilam couldn't see the angel. So Rashi says there are certain things that animals know that people don't know. So the Maharal explains, because people are rational. People try to use their minds. They try to calculate. And sometimes your attempts to calculate, to use rational thought, interfere with your ability to be sensitive to the very subtle signals that can be picked up in the world. So at the same time that we think and we reason and we try to figure things out, we miss things. Here too, says the Maharal, is an example of that. This axe knew that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and the Jew behind the plow had no idea. But then, all of a sudden, the axe groaned again. And the Arab said, now it's time to hitch your axe back to the plow. Get back to work. You can end your mourning. So he says, why? Because the Redeemer of the Jews has also been born. What is his name? The Arab said his name is Menachem. And the Medrash goes on to tell a story how this fellow behind the plow wanted to in fact find out whether it was true. So he went into a new business. He began selling children's linens, clothing. And he would travel from town to town, and all the women would come and buy things for their children, and he was waiting to find the one mother whose child was born in Tisha B'Av. So he noticed that all the women were buying. I guess that his wares were very good quality, appropriate price, but there was one woman who didn't buy. So he asked this lady, everyone is buying, why don't you buy? So she says, because my son is a bad mazel. What's the bad mazel? He was born on the day of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, he is a bad mazel. I'm not going out of my way to buy anything for him. So the man said, you know, you have to believe that in the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, you have to have faith. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give it to you on credit. And then I'll come by and I'll collect the payment. Now the reason he sold it on credit was because he wanted to follow up with his family. He wanted to see what was going on. So he gave a certain amount of time, and then he goes to collect the bill. So he comes to the woman, and she says, I told you that his luck was bad. Because shortly after this entire episode, there was a terrible storm, and the wind swept him away. I haven't seen him since. Very curious Gemara. But this is the basis of this concept that in the same way that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in Tisha B'Av, Mashiach will be born on Tisha B'Av. What does this mean? So the Maharal says, it doesn't mean that the physical Mashiach will be born on Tisha B'Av. In that instance, perhaps that boy was a potential Mashiach. But it means that until there is Churban, until there is destruction, the groundwork has not yet been laid for the coming of Mashiach. I'd like to explore this idea really on two levels. The simplest explanation to the concept that Mashiach is born, will be born, was born on Tisha B'Av is rooted in the idea that Chazal teach us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always creates the refuah before the Makkah. He always creates the cure before the disease. We know this from Megillas Esther. In the first two chapters of Megillas Esther, we read how Esther came to power, how she became the queen, and only after that, after these events, did Haman rise to power. So Chazal tell us that Haman could not rise to power. Haman and his threat could not come upon the scene until Esther was in place as the Redeemer. But we know this from many other sources. I'll show you an amazing, amazing thing. We know the Torah tells us that when the Jews went down to Mitzrayim, they went down as 70 souls. Shivim Nefesh. And yet, if you count up the names listed, you only come to 69. And the question is, who was the 70th? So there's a dispute in the Medrash. One opinion Rashi quotes, that the 70th was Yocheved, the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. And she really was born just on the doorstep of Mitzrayim, Bein HaChomos. Very curious place to be born. She couldn't have the baby in Eretz Yisrael. She couldn't have the baby in Mitzrayim. She had to have the baby just on the threshold of Mitzrayim. So Maral explains that the Golos Mitzrayim could not take place until the groundwork for redemption was laid. It seems that really Yocheved's mother should have had her a bit later. The birth came a little bit early, Bein HaChomos, to ensure that before the Jews would enter Mitzrayim, the groundwork for redemption would be laid. Not that Moshe was born, but at least that the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu was born. That's one opinion of the Medrash. But there's another opinion. The Medrash says that the 70th person was the son of Dan. The Pasuk says, Uvnei Dan Chushim. Chushim was the son of Dan, and he was the 70th. Because Yocheved was really born before, and he was the last person. He completed the number 70. He completed the preparations for going into exile. What was so special about this Dan Chushim? So in Sfarim HaKadoshim, we learn that this Chushim is also an ancestor of Mashiach. It says in Sfarim that although Mashiach will come from Shevet Yehuda, but his mother will come from Shevet Dan. Because Mashiach will be on his father's side from the tribe of Yehuda, and his mother's side from the tribe of Dan. This is why Yaakov Avinu thought that Shimshon was Mashiach. Because Shimshon also was of mixed lineage. His father was from Dan and his mother was from Yehuda, according to Chazal. But that's where Mashiach comes from. And Chushim, if you rearrange the letters, spells Mashiach. And therefore, with the birth of Chushim, we have not only the preparation for the Redeemer from Mitzrayim, but we really have the preparation for the ultimate Redeemer from Mashiach. And the Jews couldn't go into the first Golos until the Redeemer from the last Golos was born. So on the simplest level, this idea of Mashiach being born in Tisha B'Av is the idea that the refuah, the cure, has to be in place before the Makkah, before the injury can begin. But the idea is really much deeper than this. I'd like to share with you an idea that the Maral explains. And the idea requires some illustrations to fully appreciate it. The Maral explains that before any Havaya, and this is the term he uses, before any Havaya, before any existence, before anything that is real can be introduced, there has to be Heder, there has to be non-existence, there has to be destruction, there has to be decay. There has to be Churban before there can be geula. Now let me try to illustrate this point with a muscle, with a commonplace illustration. Let's say a person buys a house. He buys a little cottage, as there are many of in Toronto, little cottage, moves into the house. The house is a little small. Things begin to break down because the house is very old. So first it needs a new air conditioning unit, and then a new boiler, and then a new furnace. Then the house has to be rewired, and now the house is too small. The family is getting larger. So for a while, you do patchwork. You add a room onto the back, and you replace the furnace, and you replace the air conditioner, and you reshingle the roof. But after a while, you do so much patchwork, and so many repairs, and things are still breaking down, you come to the realization that you're not going to have a house until you tear the whole thing down and start from scratch. In order for there to be an ultimate havai, an ultimate existence, there first has to be an absolute destruction. There's only so much you can do adding on and attaching. You reach a point that you just have to destroy what there is and start anew. Give you another illustration from Jewish mystical thought. The Torah tells us that after Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, there was a decree of death, that he would have to die, that human beings would have to die. The implication is that had this decree not been made, people would have lived forever. So the question is this. We all believe that there are two stages to life. There is Olam Hazeh, there is this world, and Olam Haba. And the goal is to achieve Olam Haba, the next world. If a person would live forever in this world, when would he proceed to Olam Haba? Why would a person want to remain in this world forever? So the great Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzatov explains that certainly, even before the Chet, there would have been Olam Haba. But the transition from this world to the next world would not have been an abrupt transition. It would have been an evolutionary process. That Olam Hazeh would have become Olam Haba. How so? That the human soul would have refined its body and elevated it to a spiritual level. In turn, the rectified human being would have elevated his entire surroundings into a spiritual state, and Olam Hazeh would have been transformed to Olam Haba without that abrupt step which we call death. But as a consequence of the Chet, there were imperfections that were introduced into the body of man and into the world itself. And therefore, Olam Haba cannot evolve and emerge from Olam Hazeh. There has to be a destruction. There has to be a decay. To the human being on the individual level, that's called death. The person dies. The body decomposes. It is resurrected and recreated in a state that it can enter Olam Haba. According to the Chazal, the world itself will undergo this process of degeneration and renewal. Chazal tell us that the world as we know it will exist for 6,000 years. There will be an interruption of 1,000, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mechadesh Olamo. He'll renew the world. Because the ultimate perfection of Olam Haba cannot just be appended onto the state of Olam Hazeh. There has to be a head there. There has to be a degeneration, a decay, a destruction, if you will, before we can usher in the utopian state. Chazal tell us that in the Ikvus of Mashiach, in the era that will immediately precede the coming of Mashiach, there will be a total breakdown of the world order. Social relationships, political systems, economic systems, even the climate, There'll be unusual cycles of famine and bounty. There'll be a total breakdown of the world order. And Morale explains that's because the utopian messianic age cannot merely be built upon the foundation of present conditions. There will be a degeneration, a decay, a breakdown of Olam Hazeh, if you will, in order to facilitate the creation of the utopian world of Yemos HaMashiach. And that sounds like a lofty idea. But let's think about this for a minute, and I think that in a very concrete sense, we can understand it. We all are thinking of the terrible, terrible crisis that we face today in Eretz Yisrael. But the Am HaYoshev B'Tzion, our Jewish brothers and sisters who are living in our holy land, face dangers that seem to be unprecedented. And at the same time, it seems that the political system and perhaps the military system are unable to muster up appropriate responses. And it seems that it wasn't so in the times of great crisis that we faced in the past. Because when we were attacked by sovereign states from around, it seemed that the answers were relatively simple. Military strength, battle, war. In world opinion, we were more or less justified. We were seen as a beleaguered state, attacked from around, justified not only in defending ourselves, but even taking preemptive action. And now the situation has become so complex, and the solutions so unclear. It's not just if we have a different leader, things will work out okay. So if it's not Sharon, it'll be Netanyahu, and if it's not Netanyahu, it'll be someone else. And it's not just a question of strategy, and it's not just a question of convincing our allies. It seems that we're almost painted into a corner from which we can't extricate ourselves. It almost seems as if the system does not contain within it the potential for any solution to the problem. We look at the world, and we know that in the last several hundred years, human beings have devised many political systems, economic systems, but we see that these systems perhaps are contributing to the imminent destruction of the world itself. The invention of the atomic bomb, which was the culmination of centuries of technological advance. As long as we lived in a bipolar political world, it seems we were able to keep ourselves in check. The United States, the Soviet Union, would be a stalemate. That would guarantee that we would never come to nuclear war. And now the whole scene has changed. And with the further advance of technology, it seems that the possibility that rogue states will come into possession of atomic weapons seems more and more likely. And the solutions that once seemed so obvious, bilateral or even unilateral arms reduction, seem now to create even greater dangers. And thus the controversy over the anti-ballistic missile treaties. Global warming. The diminution of the ozone layer, if you will. It seems that all of human beings advances. Although they have contributed to our comfort and our level of satisfaction, it seems that we may be, in a sense, bringing ourselves to destruction itself. The great economic systems that emerged from the Middle Ages, capitalism and communism, the bankruptcy of communism has already been demonstrated. Will capitalism in its present form also be shown as perhaps not the ultimate solution to bringing the plenty and the bounty of this world to all its inhabitants? So we're dealing with a situation where there seems to be decay, there seems to be destruction that is built into the very system under which we live. And that, the Maharal tells us, that really is the ikvesed HaMashiach. That is the era that will precede the coming of Mashiach. An era of degeneration, an era of collapse, of social collapse, political collapse, economic collapse. And only on the foundation of that collapse can the Melech HaMashiach, with Ruach HaKodesh, with the wisdom of the Ribono Shel Olam, only can he then function as a beacon of light to bring truth and order to the world. And therefore, there has to be the collapse as long as there is a fundamental optimism in society. As long as man is convinced that we have the solutions and we have the answers, and through our own ingenuity and wisdom, we can build a utopian world, then there's no place for the wisdom of Mashiach, there's no place for the wisdom of the Ribono Shel Olam. When the world realizes that it is going into a dead end, that is when Mashiach can usher in the Yulos Mashiach, that utopian age. And therefore the Maharal says that the root of Geula, the root of redemption, is Churban itself. It's not just that Geula is put in place before the Churban comes, but Geula is rooted in Churban. It's only the destruction of Churban, the collapse of the world order, that can lay the groundwork for the coming of Mashiach. There's a great question which is asked, and I think we have to address it, because if the root of Geula is Tisha B'Av, then this is an occasion that we have to be mischazek, we have to be strengthened in our own belief in the imminent redemption. There were great generations of tzaddikim in the past. Mashiach didn't come for them. The great tzaddikim of yesteryear, the Baal Shem HaKadosh, the Vilna Gaon, go back farther, the Rambam, Rashi, the great Amoraim, the great Tanoim, they didn't merit to behold the coming of Mashiach. We, in relation to them, are ants. What is the basis of our hope? How can we hope that Mashiach should come for us if Mashiach didn't come for them? And there are questions such as this that undermine our faith. We have to address them. So there are two answers to this question I'd like to share with you. One is a very simple answer, that the expectations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has of each generation are commensurate with the spiritual qualities of that generation. So, earlier generations, God had greater expectations. Later generations, perhaps God has smaller expectations. So just because the earlier generations didn't live up to their great expectations, perhaps the later generations could live up to their smaller expectations. That's one answer. But there's another answer. The Gemara tells us that there are two possibilities for the coming of Mashiach. The Gemara says as follows, brings a verse. It says, Ani Hashem, I am the Lord, Be'ito Achishena, in its time, I will hasten the redemption. So it's a contradiction. Is it Be'ito, in due course, in its time, or is it Achishena, will it be hastened? So the Gemara says, no contradiction. Zachu, if the Jews merit, Achishena, will be hastened. Lo Zachu, if they don't merit, Be'ito, it will come in due course. There's another Gemara. The Gemara asks a contradiction, whether the coming of Mashiach will be miraculous or whether it will be natural. One verse says the Mashiach will come, V'aru Anonei Shemaya, he'll descend from the clouds in a miraculous way. Another pasuk says he'll come as an Ani Reichav Alachamor, a poor man riding on a donkey. Again, a contradiction? No contradiction. Zachu, the Jews merit, it'll be miraculous. If they don't merit, Mashiach will come as a poor man riding a donkey. The Vilna Gaon explained the Gemara as follows. That redemption is not an event. Redemption is a process. As we saw, the groundwork was laid from the first Tisha B'Av, Mashiach was born. And maybe going all the way back to the descent to Mitzrayim with the birth of Chushim Ben Dan. The groundwork was laid way, way, way long ago. And it's a process. It's a process which is unfolding. Now, let's talk about a process. Let me give a mashal, which I like to give. Let's say you're having guests for dinner. And the guests are scheduled to come at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. So you figure, how many hours do I need to prepare dinner? The shopping, the cleaning, the cooking, setting the table, 6 hours. So you allow yourself 6 hours, 12 noon, you go to the market, you do the shopping, you begin the cooking, you set the table, and you're on track. Everything is going to be ready at 6 o'clock. 4 o'clock, you get a phone call. The guests tell you, you know, we're on a tight schedule. Would you mind if we come early? How early? We're right around the corner. We're calling from the car. So you have 1 minute to complete 2 hours of preparation. So how are you going to do that? You need a miracle. You need a magic wand. To compress 2 hours of activity into 1 minute, you need an ace. So the Vilna Gaon says as follows. There is a time, there is a deadline, there is a case. There is an appointed time by which time Mashiach will come inevitably. We know that, Chazal tell us. This is the idea of Be'ita, in due course. There is a time which only God knows by which time Mashiach must come. And God is laying the groundwork for that process. Slowly, slowly, but surely, over the generations. And that process is unfolding in a natural manner. If the Jews don't merit the premature coming of Mashiach, the process will fully unfold, and then Mashiach will come in a totally natural way. If the Jews do tshuva and repent, and they deserve Mashiach coming prematurely, so now there's a problem. The groundwork hasn't been laid. So how can Mashiach come early? Then the process will be completed miraculously. So Zoch, if the Jews merit, Mashiach will come prematurely, and then the completion of the process will be miraculous. If the Jews don't merit, Mashiach will come in due course, and by that time there will be enough time for the process to unfold naturally. We live in a time that it appears, at least to me, that many of the things we associate with the Messianic Age have begun to unfold. For example, we think of Yemos HaMashiach, we think of Kibbutz Golias. We think of the ingathering of the exiles. 250 years ago, Eretz Israel was barren. Perhaps there was a minute population of Jews Certainly, far, far from a majority of the inhabitants of that region. And somehow, not through miraculous means, not through Nisim Gluyim, there's been a Kibbutz Golias, a gathering of the exiles from the Middle Eastern countries, from the European countries. It began before that with the various waves of immigration, the collapse of the Soviet Union, a little bit before that, but Russian Jews, Ethiopian Jews. No open miracles. No supernatural miracles, if you will. I think we could say there were open miracles, but not supernatural miracles. And the Kibbutz Golias, the ingathering of the exiles has taken place. It seems, from my vantage point, that the only large community of exiles which hasn't come back is the Golas of North America. United States, Canada. And perhaps that's because we have it too good. So we're too comfortable, we're too rooted here. But the Kibbutz Golias has already begun to unfold naturally to the point that not only are Jews a majority in Eretz Yisrael, it should remain that way, but I think demographers predict that sometime during this century, if things follow the natural course, the majority of world Jewry will be in Eretz Yisrael. At this point, it's not quite there. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, brings a pasuk, says, Va'atem hara Yisrael, O mountains of Israel, Anafchem titnu, give forth your branches, Ufrichem tisu, and bear your fruit, La'ami Yisrael, for my Jewish people. The Gemara says that Ein lecha ketz megula mizeh, there's no surer sign of the redemption than the agricultural bounty of Eretz Yisrael. It says, when the trees of Eretz Yisrael, when the land of Eretz Yisrael gives forth its fruit for the Jews returning from Golos, that's a sign of the imminent redemption. For hundreds of years, none of the occupying nations could coax anything out of the soil of Eretz Yisrael. And when Jews came back, by all sorts of means, they managed to turn Eretz Yisrael into a bountiful source of plenty for its people. That's a step in the coming of Mashiach. I always joke that plastic is a necessary step in the process of redemption. The invention of plastic. How so? Because we know when Mashiach comes, all the laws of Tumah and Tahara will exist, will be relevant to the Beis HaMikdash. And you know, if a person, let's say, is Tameh, touches a dead body, he goes into his house, he'll defile everything in the house. The furniture, the bedding, the clothes. Got to take it all to the mikveh. Some of the things are dry clean only. So, the Ribbono Shel Olam solved the problem. He gave us the ingenuity to create plastic. Plastic is not makabel tumah. Soon everything will be made of plastic. There will be no problem. Transportation, communication. You know, the Nevi'im tell us how in Mashiach's time, how everyone will be summoned by the sound of the shofar, how it says that the Jews will come on conveyances which are like doves flying to their nests. But what do these nevuos mean? But with the invention of modern means of communication, the invention of jet, airliners, we know how these things are going to take place. So, in natural ways, the groundwork is being laid. With each passing year, more of the groundwork is laid. And therefore, we could say as follows, that 200 years ago, when the Vilna Gaon lived, and a little bit before that, when the Baal Shem Tov lived, there was so much of the groundwork that had not yet been laid, that for Mashiach to come then would have required greater miracles. And greater miracles require greater merits. And perhaps that generation, as great as it was, didn't have the merit to deserve those great miracles.
But we, after 250 more years, and so much of the natural groundwork has been laid, and now there's just a little bit necessary to complete the process, maybe even our meager schuyas, our meager merits, will be enough to bring the completion of the process. And that really should give us hope. It's true Mashiach didn't come for the greater generations of yesteryear, because so much more would have had to be done for Mashiach to come then. But for now, we're on the threshold. So the little bit that remains to be done, perhaps even we can accomplish, even we can be deserving. Maybe that's the meaning of this, the Medrash. That's what the name of Mashiach is. The two opinions, one opinion is that it's Menachem, the other opinion that it's Tzemach. The Gemara says there's no Machlokes, really the Gematria is the same. Menachem, which means a comforter, implies something sudden, something abrupt, something which by definition can only come after the calamity. After the calamity, there can be a Menachem, there can be a source of comfort. Tzemach implies a process. There's a seed, it's a sprout, it grows. One would have thought that perhaps this is a machlokas. This is a dispute. Is Mashiach an event? That's Menachem. Or is it a process? That's Tzemach. Says the Medrash, no, Chushbun of the Dain, Chushbun of the Dain. Really, it's the same. The Gematria is the same. It's just two different ways of looking at it. To the person who looks without insight, it will seem as if the coming of Mashiach is something abrupt, something eventful. To the person who has more insight, it will be really the unfolding of a process. It will be a tzemach, a sprout from a seed which was planted long, long ago. I think the point I'd like to make in closing is that we have to be mindful of. I once heard a story from an elderly gentleman. I don't even know if the man is still alive. I heard this many years ago. He told me how he had the privilege of hearing Zev Jabotinsky speak in the 1930s in New York. If you know a little bit about Zionist history, you'll know he was the head of the revisionist Zionists, who were really the dynamic force behind the push for a state in Eretz Yisrael. And he heard Jabotinsky speak passionately. And he gave his speech, and then he took questions from the audience. So someone in the audience asked him a question, says, okay, you'll have your state, and then what? So you'll have a state, and then what? So Jabotinsky said, and then Ki mitzion teitzei sora udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. That's what his answer was. We talk about Mashiach's coming, and everything will be fine. We'll all be living in Eretz Yisrael, in a state of security, and peace, and plenty, prosperity. It'll be great. And then what? We'll have everything we want in the material sense. But then what? So I'd like to close with the words of the Rambam, the immortal words of the Rambam. Lo nisavu hanaviim v'achachomim yimosa Mashiach. The reason that the prophets and the sages yearned for the Messianic age, lo kadei sheyishlutu kol ha'olam, it isn't that they could rule over the world, v'lo kadei sheyirdu bagayim, not that they should be able to overlord over the nations, v'lo kadei sheyinasu osam ha'amim, not that they be exalted by the nations, and not to eat and drink and rejoice, Ella, but rather, Kadei she'iyu pnuyim b'Torah v'chachmasa, that we should be free to study Torah, engage in its wisdom, perform mitzvahs, v'lo yielam noges u'mavata, we should have no oppressor, no one to distract us, kadei she'yizku l'chayo l'm haba. U'va'isaz man, and in that time, lo yiesham lo rav, there'll be no famine, lo mochama, no war, lo kinevatachrus, no jealousy or competition. Shatova tia mushpas harbe, there'll be an abundance of good. V'chom ha'adan and all the delights metzuyin ke'efer. V'lo yiyya esek ala'olam el ladasas Hashem b'vad. And the activities of all humanity will be to come to knowledge of God. But that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about peace as an end in itself. We're not talking about prosperity as an end in itself. We're not talking about freedom as an end in itself. We're talking about all of these things, but as means to an end. They're all important. Peace is important, prosperity is important, and independence, they're all important. But they're not important as ends in themselves. They're important as means to an end. And the end is the life which is devoted to Torah, to mitzvahs, to understanding God, to living lives of kedusha, of holiness. It's not my place to give musar, but the Rambam is giving us musar. And the Rambam is telling us as follows. The Rambam says that we can't pull the wool over God's eyes. We can't stand Shmoneh Esrei three times a day and tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, send us Mashiach, we want Mashiach, if we don't really have any interest in the ultimate purpose of Mashiach. Because Baruch Hashem, we live in a society where we don't have to work 7 days a week. We don't have to work 16 hours a day just to produce enough sustenance to keep body and soul together. Many of us work the 40-hour week, and we have our weekends off, and we have plenty of time. We have time for learning Torah, we have time for mitzvahs, we have time for tefillah b'tzibur. We have time to elevate ourselves, and we have time to elevate our family spiritually as well. If we don't take advantage of the opportunities that we have in Golos, in the present state, and yet we come to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, we want Mashiach, what are we asking for? Then we'd be asking for prosperity as an end in itself, and peace as an end in itself, and so on and so forth. And covet and honor and dignity as ends in themselves. But that, the Rambam tells us, is not the point. That wasn't the approach of the great sages, that wasn't the approach of the Nevi'im. They saw beyond that. And they understood that what we're really asking for is the unimaginable spiritual opportunity that Yemos Mashiach provide. If we're asking for that, then we are hypocritical if we don't take advantage of the opportunities we have. And because I'm speaking in this shul, I'll speak about this shul. And my guess is there are people from many shuls, but I'll speak about this shul, the wonderful work that Rabbi Kelman is doing, especially in organizing this event today, but year-round, with all the events he organizes and all the programs that are run in this shul. There are opportunities that exist. Opportunities to learn, opportunities to grow, opportunities to become elevated. In this shul and other shuls throughout the city, there are so many spiritual opportunities. Tisha B'Av, we understand, there's not much else you can do in Tisha B'Av. So today we're not competing with television, we're not competing with sporting events, we're not competing with a barbecue in the backyard. I understand that. So Baruch Hashem, when there's no competition, we come out. But when there is competition, you'd have to be a brave man to sponsor an event like this on Super Bowl Sunday. Maybe brave is not accurate. Foolhardy would be more correct. But if we really are asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to make this the last Tisha B'Av, and we're making that request for the right reason, then I think we have to begin thinking as to what extent are we taking advantage of the opportunities we have. If we take advantage of those opportunities to learn and to daven and to do mitzvahs and to engage in chesed and to make a contribution to our community, so then, b'derach shalom lo tzaleilech molichan aso. On the way that a person wants to go, God will lead him. And the Ribbono Shel Olam will give us all the siyata d'shmaya, the assistance, to be able to do more and learn more and have more and grow more, hopefully, with the coming of Mashiach, than here of Yameinu.
Thank you very much. We'll take a 5-minute break, and Rabbi Skobach will speak. Just a quick announcement. I know he can talk in 30 seconds. For those who were at the taping before on the tape, A Time to Heal on the Kapi Spine movie, which I said was quite an inspirational and powerful movie, there are tapes available. I have about 50 tapes here. If anybody's interested in purchasing the tape, let me know. Also, for those, they've asked for a donation, the Chabad Chaim Foundation. So anyway, to make payment, I think the most of the people did. And we'll see you in 5 minutes.
One away from me. I don't have my money with me to take. You don't have a video tape, do you?
Well, we have just the one we showed. Now, I don't know how to turn this off. How do you turn this off?
So, Jay, you remember to hold one for me?
Yeah.
Okay. But
I'd like to turn this off.
Press the stop.
I know, I don't know what to stop
this. Yeah, that one.